It's 8:10 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, joined in the studio by Cheryl Fox, Director of Summit Land Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning.
So just an update on the Oscar Thorpe property, still raising money.
We're still raising money. As we've been out in the community talking to people, we keep hearing that there's a misconception out there that people think that the transaction is completed, and that's not the case. We had a lot of publicity and we had a big push in February because we had to make a down payment. So we made a down payment, which is great, and it was a huge push and a huge lot of people came out, which was super supportive and wonderful. But that was just a down payment, and as everybody knows, a down payment is not the end of the road for a transaction. So we are continuing to raise money to save the farm on Old Ranch Road, the big green heart of the basin. You can see it from all over town right now if you're on trails in Round Valley or Mid Mountain Trail or even up in Gamble Oak. You can see that big green square, and that's what we're trying to save. So we've been making some progress. You know, we did need $2.8 million. Now we need $2.6 million. So we're chipping away at it, and that's the way we do these things. So I just want people to know that it is not finished. If people happen to be out at barbecues or, you know, socializing over the holiday week here and somebody says, oh, yeah, that's great, but it's done, it's not done.
Okay. You still got, what, $3 million left?
Not three. I think we're, let's see, we're at 2.6.
Okay.
So almost, yeah.
All right. Let's see. You've got a number of easement transactions happening along the Weber River as well as Chalk Creek happening in the next couple of months. Tell us about those.
That's right. We have been working with our partners at the NRCS, the federal government, you know, with these farm bill programs to save farm and ranch land. And we have two transactions right along the Weber. One's in Wanship and one is further downstream in Hennifer. And then we have about an 800-acre ranch up in Chalk Creek that contains a portion of the actual Chalk Creek itself, and it's also sage-grouse habitat. So we are fortunate that we've been able to get that federal funding because, you know, that really, the federal government, these programs will pay up to 50% of the easement value. And then we have to bring the match to the table, but there's been, you know, community funding through the Eastern Summit County Agricultural Preservation Committee, as well as others. And we will be making an application to ESAP for one of those in the next month.
Mm-hmm. How much do you talk about having to raise there?
We need about, it's under $250,000 for that last piece. And it's the one in Wanship, and we hope that ESAP will want to fund that. It's, you know, it hits most of their targets in terms of what they would like to do. It's imminently visible. You see it from the rail trail. You see it from the East Hoytsville Road. It's a beautiful piece of property. Then the river runs right through it. It's about 80, a little more than 80 acres.
Yeah, so you've got like, are they competing? They're all competing for the same dollars, yeah?
No, not really. You know, there are federal programs and they want to fund these types of things. So as long as you bring in a transaction that fits the criteria, there is funding available. So the two that are right on the Weber River were actually funded, I think it was 2016. It was our 2016 federal application. So
yeah, but when you talk about having to bring some matches to it, I mean, that's then pulling money away from the Oscar Thorpe or, you know, whatever else you're working on.
Again, that's a really good question. We don't find that it does pull money away. People tend to want to support the transactions that are closer to home, which makes sense. We don't do a lot of community fundraising in the eastern part of Summit County because there are other funding sources that will come to the table. So, you know, we say, all right, in 2017, we'll make an application to this funding source, and then in the next year, it's another one. So, you know, there is a limited amount of what we can do just because there isn't a ton of matching funds in the state of Utah like there are in Colorado or California. So that does limit us, and we are trying to talk to our elected officials, our state elected officials, to see if they'll put some money towards land conservation.
Well, they took it away, right?
They took it away. Mm-hmm. Yep, that doesn't help us.
Yeah. But when you look at just all of the competing interests we've got, of course, we've got the Oscar Thorpe Farm. We're going to be talking about buying open space here with a bond treasure. We've got the snow pasture ranches. Lots going on.
You know, when the market's hot for open space, it's hot. And I think, you know, we go for long periods of time where nobody wants to sell and nobody's ready to do it. And, You know, it's a big decision for landowners who've had their property for a long time. And to make a conservation choice is a especially difficult decision, because a conservation choice usually means they're walking away from money, right? They're going to sell at a discount one way or another. So I think that what I like to say is we will not save most of the open spaces that we see out there. Most of it will not be saved. Most of it will go down to development because there's just more money there. So when we have the opportunity to save something, we really should pounce on it. And, you know, it's challenging that all of these opportunities have arisen kind of at exactly the same time. You know, we had been working on our Osgathorpe deal for, you know, a year or so, and we were ready to take it public, and the city announced that it was doing Bonanza Flat. So we thought, well, let's see if we can get a little more money and get our ducks in a row a little bit further on Osgathorpe and see what happens with Bonanza Flat. So, you know, we recognize that we are asking the community for a tremendous amount of support, but the opportunities are now, and if we don't seize them now, we will lose them.
Well, and two big differences, I mean, between Bonanza Flat Treasure and then Osgathorpe are the fact that you're buying a conservation easement on Osgathorpe.
That's
we're
right.
buying the property outright, which that's means
right.
we're paying $38 million and $64 million for it.
You know, that's a really good point, Leslie. All across the country, communities have realized that buying land outright is the most expensive way to do it. When the property is owned already by an investor or a developer, that is the only way to do it. And we're fortunate in Park City that the community has said, all right, you know, we're going to step up. We're going to bond. It's fair to all parties. We want that as open space. Then let's step up and buy it. But in other parts of the country, and with the Osgathorpe transaction, people have realized that they can really leverage their community dollars by working with a landowner. So the landowner keeps the property. It stays on the tax rolls. The landowner is responsible for upkeep of that property. So it's not an ongoing drain to the community. So it really is a more cost-effective way of keeping the space open. And yeah, there are trade-offs. You don't get quite as much public access, but the trade-off is you also don't have to pay for the upkeep, you know, forever.
Okay.
And you don't pay as much money for it.
Right. Finally, you've got your Blue Sky Bash, a big fundraiser for the organization Summit Land Conservancy next month. You're offering
That's right.
a special?
We have a special, a 4th of July special. So I was somehow had in my head the other day that wonderful song, America the Beautiful. And as it was singing in my head, you know, oh, beautiful for spacious skies and amber waves of grain and purple mountains majesty, it struck me that it does not talk about the beautiful subdivisions or the pavement or the concrete. It talks about the beautiful open land that is our heritage and, in a large sense, our identity as Americans. And that's what the Summit Land Conservancy works to protect, those open spaces, those purple mountains. So in honor of that and the 4th of July, we decided to have a special one-day extension of our early bird pricing for the Blue Sky Bash tickets, and that's today. So if people will go to our website, which is wesaveland.org, and right there on the front page, wesaveland.org, they'll see a button for the Blue Sky Bash, and they can buy tickets at the early bird price for one more day, which means they're $300 a piece as opposed to $350 a piece. And come to the Blue Sky Bash on August 25th. That's Saturday, August 25th. The ticket includes a free shuttle from Park City up to the beautiful Blue Sky Ranch outside of Wanchep. It's a wonderful dinner catered by High West with signature cocktails, and there will be dancing and a very short live auction and presentation because it is a fundraiser and it is really... it supports all of the conservation programs, all of the programs that the Summit Land Conservancy does. So it's really one of our most important fundraisers. So,
okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All
we hope people will come.
See you next month.
Thank you.
It's 8:20 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the annual Oakley Rodeo kicks off tomorrow night, runs through Saturday. On the phone with details, I have the mayor of Oakley, Wade Wolstenhume. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I think this is the 83rd annual?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, before we get to the details of it, can you give us just a little bit of history of the event? That means it started back in the 1930s sometime by...
Yeah, I believe the first rodeos was held over in what we call Stevens Grove, which is right across the road from where our new Stevens Conservancy Park is located now. They just kind of put a snow fence around and buck calves and horses out in the field, and I think there's some old footage of it. And then every year it's just been getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well, I think that...
In 1983, it became a professional rodeo. Went from amateur to professional, and ever since that, it's grown to be one of the biggest professional rodeos in the country.
Oh, wow. And I think members of your family had a lot to do with that, yeah?
Yeah, yep. I think in some of them old footages, you can see pictures of my dad riding.
And
for years.
Your dad is who?
Ken Wolfson.
Okay.
Past commissioner.
Correct. So you guys have got the beautiful new rodeo grounds, and basically what, just to deal with the growth that you've seen in the event, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we have always been known for selling out. I mean, we've always had good crowds. When we moved over here, I think it's been about 12 years ago, we moved to our new location. We tried to build it similar to the old arena. Got a few more seats, and we're sold out already again this year.
Okay, so you don't even have a seat left, huh?
Well, if you show up, there's a lot of times they'll turn back some tickets, or somebody gets sick and don't show up, and there's tickets available. So you can take a chance and come and possibly get in. But for the most part, they're all sold out, yeah.
Wow. And they go on sale, I think, pretty early in the year, right?
Yeah, they'll go on sale probably the 1st of August, I believe.
Oh, for next year.
You can go online and get your tickets reserved. And I would encourage anyone to go do that.
All right. So anything new this year?
No, we got, I think they always do a good job, the committee, in getting new entertainment, in between the rodeo contest with, I think they got a trick rider this year, and we always have a good clown that tells good jokes and entertains the crowds in between rides, and they've just done a really good job, and we've had a lot of great support from all our sponsors this year.
Okay. And talk to me just a little bit about rodeos. I often hear people saying, that's not good for the animals. But lots of times, I've heard too, it's like animals love to do that stuff. What is it?
Well, I know the horses that I've had and raised, when I first get on them, they love to buck me off. and I love to try to stay on them, but I've been around the rodeo business for a long time myself, and the contractors or the owners of the stock, they take such great care of their animals. I mean, you'll never see an ill-fit animal at a rodeo. They work for 8 seconds, maybe every twice a week, and they're well-treated. I mean, they feed them well. They take good care of them. Most of the contractors, I know Barty that furnishes the stock for our rodeo. I've been to their ranch and seen their production. They raise their own colts and brood mares, and it's just pretty cool to watch it. I remember about 10 years ago, I took my two sons out to inspect their livestock, and it was such a beautiful sight to see all those animals and how well fit they were and how well taken care of they were. And I've been around, I get to go to a lot of rodeos because I actually judge rodeos in my spare time. And I haven't seen a contractor out there at the professional level that doesn't just take the best care of their animals.
All right. So you guys will be shooting off fireworks after each show, or is it still kind of weathered?
We are planning on shooting them off now. If a big windstorm come up or something like that, we would make a judgment call at that point whether to do it or not. But I think the forecast has good weather, so we're going to plan on shooting them off every night.
Okay. So what's the town of Oakley's policy on fireworks and open fires this year besides these, large events?
We have not given open. We have not banned anything We're just encouraging all our citizens to be mindful of their neighbors and mindful of where they're at and what they're doing, and just try to be careful.
All right. Let's change topics real quick and talk a little bit about in June we reported that some repairs were done to one of your major water sources. What was the problem there?
We had a well, we call it our humbug well, and we had some issues where it wasn't producing, and we needed to pull the well and clean it and do maintenance to it that hadn't been done for a long, long time. And in the process, we found that the pump wasn't working correctly, and we had some O-rings that were displaced, and just things weren't working very good. So we were shut down with that source for probably about 3 weeks. And so we have two different sources that we're pulling our water from, and the other two sources kept up really good until we got to the heat of the summer, and then people started watering outside, and so we had to ask people not to water outside. But we got through it, and we got everything back together now and running, and we're keeping up. So we're going to get on a better maintenance program in the future, and hopefully this will never happen again.
Yeah, I was going to say that well is aptly named, Humbug, huh?
Yeah, it's Humbug Well, yep.
Yeah. So other than...
And I don't know how they come up with that name, but that's what they call it.
Yeah, so other than the outdoor restrictions, outdoor watering restrictions, did you need to put in any other restrictions, or people just abided in that?
No, that's all we did. And, you know, for the most part, people did what we asked them to do. There were a few violations and things like that, and maybe we needed to do a better job in communicating what we needed done. And we learned a lot from that experience, and we're going to do a better job next time, you know, of communicating and even going door to door and asking people for help.
Wanted to ask you your reaction to the new transit taxes. Is that something that Oakley City Council got behind?
Yes, they did. The county came and met with us, I think it was 2 weeks ago, and the council did get behind it. If you look at the tax itself, it's going to have very minimal impact on the pocketbook of the average citizen, and we felt that the benefits that we would gain by increased funding to help keep our roads and streets in better shape was worth it. We did have a little bit of hesitance in supporting it just for the mere fact of all the entities in government right now that are trying to go for truth in taxation with school districts and bonds and things that are going on with the new tax for education that they're trying to pass, the 10-cent tax on gas. All of it is needed, but all of it at once, it kind of seems overwhelming, so we're just hoping that we can get through it.
Yeah. Oakley City Council, were you able to pass a budget with no tax increase?
Yes. Yes, we were.
All right. And in terms of any transit improvements, I know you'd like to use the money for road work, but what about transit improvements, because that's part of it?
Well, I think right now, and we talked to the county council about this, right now they have a bus that goes to Camas and then takes people to Park City and back. We did ask them at what point would that make a loop through Oakley and back, and they said that is in the general plan, but it's probably not going to happen for a few years.
Okay. So yeah, just kind of an offshoot there that would get Oakley residents to the transit stop there in Camas.
Hmm. Okay. Yes.
All right. Any other improvements that you were hoping for?
No, we got plenty of work to do right now on our own roads and things like that. It seems like with the minimal budget small cities have to do that kind of thing and the growing cost of road work and construction, it is hard to get a lot done. You don't get much done on the dollar you have. So we're just going to work, plug at our roads little by little. We passed a resolution in our last city council meeting to renew a bond and get us more revenue to help work on the infrastructure of our of both of our water and sewer systems to try to improve them. So those are just things that are ongoing in Oakley City, and you know we're working hard to keep things in good shape.
Okay. Well, again, the 83rd annual Oakley Rodeo kicking off tomorrow night. Wade, appreciate your time this morning talking to us, and say hi to your dad.
I will. Thank you. You guys have a good one.
That's Wade Wilstonhume, mayor of Oakland. It's 8:32 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, water quality in Park City has proven challenging, whether it's arsenic or antimony. City officials spending millions of dollars to meet state and federal water quality standards. The city last week issued its annual Water Consumer Confidence Report. In the studio to talk a little bit more about that, I have Park City Utilities Director Clint McAfee, along with Water Quality Program Manager Michelle DeHaan. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So the good news, Michelle, is that Park City's water has met or exceeded the water quality standards set by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Utah Division of Drinking Water. I guess for the most part, because that's we're using treated water from Jordanelle, treated water from the Rockport or Weber River, and what, a handful of wells that we've got?
Yeah, that's correct. We have seven different drinking water sources that we either import through Jordanelle Special Services District or through Weber Basin for the Quinns Junction water from Rockport, and three wells and a spring, and we treat Spiro Tunnel water as well. So those are all treated sources, and that the table in the water quality report details the contaminants that were detected in the water.
Right. And when you look at it, it shows the maximum contaminant load, and we meet, I mean, we're at the maximum for antimony, barium, is that how you say it? I don't know my chemicals, fluoride, nitrate, selenium.
Yeah, we're actually well below the maximum contaminant levels for antimony. Like on the table, if you look, we have a detected level from non-detect through 4.4 micrograms per liter, where the MCL is 6 micrograms per liter. So we are below the drinking water standards.
Okay. And then what's the MCL?
The MCL for antimony is 6.
Okay. So those two numbers, I mean, what's the difference between the MCLG and the MCL?
So the MCLG is where there's absolutely no risk that is known to the public. The MCL is has risk associated with it, but is more technology-based, where you can't necessarily get to levels like zero in measuring contaminants in a lot of cases.
Okay, so I'm seeing here level detected. You've got a low and a high then are not
That's
detected
correct.
At all.
That's correct.
Okay, so actually then you are doing, well below any of those.
That's correct.
Yeah. In terms of the water, are any water testing done from the Judge Tunnel at this? Because I know we're just letting that flow downstream.
Yes, we do actually test Judge Tunnel water as well, because that's one of our drinking water sources that we had utilized prior to 2013. And we will be treating it again for drinking water with the new Three Kings plant, which is under design right now.
Okay. And what about the Spiro Tunnel? That's also being tested?
Yep. It's tested for stream and drinking water standards. And the Spiro Tunnel water is tested both in raw and in the finished water plant from the Spiro Tunnel plant.
Okay. And when it's raw, it doesn't meet these standards, but we dilute it enough and treat it enough that it's fine.
That's correct. It's primarily treatment. We do a little bit of dilution for antimony compliance.
Okay. So the report is for 2017. It takes half a year to get this report put out, huh?
Actually, the EPA requires that we publish the results from the calendar year prior to publishing, so the 2017 data. We have been collecting samples since then, of course, in 2018, and all of those results, again, do meet all regulations.
Okay. So in terms of cleaning up all of our mine waste, it seems like a few years ago we met with the EPA, and basically they wanted to start from the top, Clint, and kind of work its way down. Are those efforts being done at this point?
I'm probably not the best person to talk to about the soil cleanup. We're focused on the water. Jim Blankenau is much more involved in that effort.
So that doesn't bring, that doesn't contaminate the water?
Well, so what we're focused on is point sources. That's what we've been tasked with by the EPA and the Division of Water Quality. So we're focused on treating Judge and Spiro tunnels.
Okay. So another issue affecting water, though, is in our nearby reservoirs with Rockport, and we had reported about the algal blooms there. If that's a major source of our water, is that a concern?
It's a good question, Leslie. The harmful algal bloom world is somewhat new, you know, in the water industry, and so we have with the Quinns Junction Water Treatment Plant, have very advanced technologies. We utilize microfiltration and granular activated carbon and chlorine on those facilities, which all have effective measures towards removal of harmful algal blooms. So we ensure we're treating all of the water through those processes. When we do treat that water, and there are times of year when we have harmful algal blooms when we don't need the Quinns Junction water due to lower demands in the shoulder season. And those time periods, we actually take precautions to lessen our use of that water during those time periods. But primarily, the harmful algal blooms are at risk for recreational purposes.
Okay. And then with the current federal administration, we've been seeing the EPA laxing standards and regulations really across the board. Any deregulation that would impact our water source, drinking sources?
Not deregulation so much. You can't, in the Safe Drinking Water Act, the government isn't allowed to anti-backslide or change regulations that have already been established. We aren't seeing a lot of new regulations in the current administration.
Okay. And, of course, with the dry, hot summer so far, I mean, we're only a couple weeks into it, how are we doing on water production?
We're doing really well, actually. One of the things that we've done a great job with in our planning efforts is to ensure we have diversified sources. And with having seven different sources, that really helps us be able to meet demands if we were to have any technical challenges that cause us to have one of our wells down, for example.
Yeah, so we could be okay with one of the sources offline?
Yes.
Yeah, not only today, but the first summer that the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant will be being reconstructed, Spiro will be offline. So we've made significant investments in infrastructure to allow us to continue to provide water at the current level of service during the reconstruction of that water treatment plant. So today it's operating. So we have a large amount of surplus water available. So in the event of a well or even two wells going offline, we can still meet the demands of the community during the summer.
Where's that surplus water being held, in Jordanelle?
So we look at it from a peak day standpoint. We don't necessarily have a storage reservoir full of water that, you know, has Park City's name on it. We have the mine tunnels, the wells, and then some wholesale import supplies. And we look at the peak day flow rate. So, for example, yesterday was this year's highest demand at 8 million gallons a day of potable water. So that does not include what we put into the streams or the two golf courses, but that's well below what we can produce this time of year. So we have plenty of redundancy and surplus.
Yeah. What is the production capability?
I'm trying to convert some numbers in my head. It's about 11,000 gallons a minute. 8 MGD is about 5 or 6,000 gallons a minute. So, again, it does not include the golf courses or the creeks. So we're probably somewhere in the range of 80% of our total production capacity when you look at demand today.
Yeah, it's easy just to turn the sprinklers off at the golf course, but in terms of the creeks, that's something we don't want to do. Right? I mean, otherwise things dry up and...
Yeah, so water rights dictate how much water we can take from any given source. The Spiro Tunnel is a complicated water source, but everything that is produced in the Spiro Tunnel downstream of a certain point is tributary to the creek, and Park City has no right to divert it. In addition to that, there's a 1985 agreement with Weber Basin that stipulates that everything produced upstream of that point, 25% of that also remains in the creek. There's also several seeps and springs around town that feed McLeod Creek. Silver Creek is a different story. There is a high likelihood that that creek could go dry, especially when we start diverting Judge Tunnel in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, it seems dry already this year. I mean, is that because the Judge sources?
Judge is putting about 2 or 3 CFS in, closer to 2, about 900 gallons a minute, up in Daly Canyon. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think it's a kind of a losing stream. So as, you know, the ground soaks it up and water, as it travels downstream, the quantity actually decreases. And there's not a lot of other tributaries that feed that stream. So by the time it gets to, you know, out by Highway 40, it's a trickle.
Yeah. So what are you seeing, though, in terms of sources? Are they dropping? I mean, are the wells down? Are the springs less? Yeah.
Yeah. So the variable sources we have are the Spiro and Judge and Thurriot Springs. Right now, they're actually producing about average flow rates. In fact, they're above average. You know, we had 5 dry winters and 1 wetter winter last year. And with that 1 wetter winter, that kind of boosted us a little bit. But before that, we were seeing well below averages. So last summer, for example, those 3 sources were flowing below average.
Okay. And as you mentioned, the Three Kings treatment plant is under design at this point. When do you actually get under construction?
If everything goes well, September of 2019, we will start demolishing Three Kings Water Treatment Plant. And this project is just part of our broader effort to improve water quality in the city. So the initial effort started about 6 years ago. The city is making significant investment in infrastructure related to water quality. So this is one step in the process. We plan to have the new treatment plant online and producing water in 2023. But along with that, there's a lot of other impacts. The Judge Tunnel pipeline that was built several years ago was one of those. We've been making improvements to Quinn's water treatment plant, adding filtration. We just rebuilt and added filtration to the Park Meadows and Divide wells. As part of the new treatment plant, we need to run a pipeline from Wyatt Earp westbound to the new treatment plant on the golf course, as well as from the Spiro Tunnel all the way to the new treatment plant. We're going to try to minimize the impacts as much as possible, and these are spread out over about a 5-year period. But this is the Three Kings Water Treatment Plant is one piece of the overall program to improve water quality.
All right. That Creekside treatment plant, that's what's treating the Park Meadows and Divide sources?
And that's over at Creekside Park. The new water treatment plant there does treat Park Meadows well water, which has been under the influence of surface water designated in 2006 and in 2012 again. And so we had to add additional treatment because of new regulations. That plant actually was really designed with the neighborhood in mind. It was super important for us to think about public safety. And we did some things that were unique there. We're actually creating our own chlorine there, utilizing on-site chlorine generation rather than hauling in liquid chlorine as we have in the past on that site. So the only thing that we have on site there that helps us with making chlorine on site as a disinfectant is utilizing salt. And so we have salt on site and delivered there, and we use a electrolytic conversion with electricity. And there's some panels and some pictures of that in the Consumer Confidence Report. And what happens is we create on-site hypochlorite at that site.
So this is what we kind of see happening with pools and spas and stuff, yeah?
That's right. We're just going to more safer and lower concentration of chlorine.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, though, it has to get treated at the treatment plant. So is adding more salt an issue?
No, that's not so much an issue relative to the overall supply because it is just one of 7 of the sources that we have. And note that we also utilize ultraviolet light and cartridge filtration at this site as well. And we'll be having a ribbon-cutting ceremony in late July, August for that plant, and we'll actually be having an open house for the Three Kings design as well in July on the...
Yeah, July 16th.
Thank you.
We are going to have an open house for the Three Kings water treatment plant. We are sending invitations to the neighborhoods direct or the neighbors directly impacted. So there's about 600 invitations we're mailing out to the Thames Canyon residents. They should be getting that soon, inviting them to a public open house on Monday, July 16th, and it'll be at the library. And basically we'll have staff there to answer any questions. The community can provide comment. And this is in before we submit to the Planning Commission. And it's important to note that, you know, we have a concept design for this water treatment plant. We went through kind of a pretty exhaustive alternatives analysis with council. Council decided that the best place for this water treatment plant, at staff's recommendation, was at its current location. And now we're going into the permitting process, which includes public comment. So the opportunity for the public to provide comment is through the planning and permitting process. And there'll be plenty of opportunity for the public to do so.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
No, I just would encourage people to take a look at the Consumer Confidence Report. Again, it was mailed last week, and it is available both in English and in Spanish this year on our website at parkcitywater.org.
Okay, Michelle, Clint, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, Freshie's Lobster Company, the Park City Restaurant and Food Truck, defending its world's best lobster roll next week in the studio to tell us a little bit more about the competition and the opening of a new store. I believe I have Lauren Samaa. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you have a great story. You folks made your way to Park City, back in 2008 or a little before that?
Moved here in 2005 and started up selling the lobster rolls in 2008.
Okay. So you're from back east where lobster rolls is like a way of life. Huh?
Exactly. Ben, my husband, is from Maine and I'm from New Hampshire. But we did meet out here and just, you know, felt like we were just lacking a good lobster roll around. So we gave it a try and slowly grew it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you started at Silly Sunday is what I think I read, then bought a food truck, and then you opened up the shop on Prospector.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So the food truck, we started that in 2013, and then the restaurant in Park City at the end of 2016.
Okay. And then you've also got plans for a new store in Salt Lake?
Yep. 900 South, 356 East. So down by Liberty Park, we're going to be opening a little over a month now.
Okay.
So we're building it out right now.
Yeah. The place here in Park City, pretty small. Is this going to be a little bit bigger?
Yes, this is going to be bigger. Hopefully it'll take a little bit of pressure off this Park City location because, I mean, honestly, on Saturdays, it's a little bit too busy. So I'm hoping some of the Salt Lake folks that make their way up will come to our location in Salt Lake and it'll relieve a little pressure off the Park City location.
Well, as I mentioned a year ago, Freshie's winning the title of World's Best Lobster Roll. It was at the inaugural Down East Lobster Roll Festival in Portland, Maine. You defeated 11 others for the title, and I'm wondering, did you get some people scratching their forehead, wondering how a couple from landlocked Utah knew what they were doing?
Oh yeah. There was plenty of Mainers that would come up for their sample lobster roll and just, you know, saw Park City and said, what? And so we had to tell them the story. You know, we're originally from New England, and we do know what we're doing a little bit here. So that helped. But we went into it definitely thinking, you know, people are just going to not vote for us on purpose, you know, last year. But we were so shocked when we won. It was really amazing. And I think people went there to truly give, you know, their honest feedback. And so...
Yeah. How does that help the marketing of the business?
Oh, my gosh. Last year after that, it was insane. I mean, every news channel from Salt Lake was in our restaurant for 2 weeks after. And then we had about 2 months of just chaos at the food truck in the restaurant. It was pretty incredible. There isn't any better marketing you could ever pay for.
Yeah. So a little apprehensive going into the competition this week?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we were watching this video and it's like Maine's ready to take it back. So but, you know, we just felt like we had to go back and defend our title. I think my manager said, you know, Tom Brady wouldn't not show up at the Super Bowl. So, you know, we're gonna go do our best, have some fun, and, you know, just have fun with it.
Yeah, so how does the contest work? I mean, are they blindfolded?
So, I wish they were, but no. So what they do is they sell tickets to 450 locals, and those people are going to go around. And this year it's 10 different companies, and they are going to sample 10 different lobster rolls, and they have an online app that they're going to vote on. They'll pick their first, second, and third, and then that's it. So they're not going to leave it to a panel of judges like they did last year. This year it's you know, all the people's vote.
Ah, okay.
Last year it was the people's vote, and then it went down to the top three, and then there was a panel of judges and food critics that did that.
Ah, so I mean, can it be stacked that way?
Like it was last year. Well, the guy who lost definitely thought it was. Even though, I think we just had our, you know, we. There was nothing. I don't see how that was possible, but because we didn't know anybody. But yeah, I think I like it better this way. And in fact, the lady who ran it last year, she did say if it was a popular vote, because the first round, if they went by that, we would have won anyway as well. So that felt good. She told me that this year when we were discussing it. But I think this way is going to be a better way of voting, and just let it be people's choice. And hopefully, you know, people aren't going to be stacking against us. So
when is the competition?
It's this Saturday.
Oh, okay. So you guys are packing up and ready to go?
Well, we're getting there, yeah.
I mean, it's busy time for you guys to leave, yeah?
It's insane. I always get to, you know, a couple days before, just like I did last year. And, you know, the restaurant's crazy. We're catering. We're food trucks out. And I'm like, you know, how are we going to do this? How do we leave? But yeah, you know, once we get out the door, everyone takes care of things. We have great staff, so.
Good. Yeah, because you're going to be out tonight at the Los Lonely Boys? Are you going to be out there?
We're going to be at the Big Stars Bright Nights tonight. And we are going to close tomorrow, though. The restaurant will be closed tomorrow. Give everyone a break.
Okay. Talk a little bit about how you get the lobster to Utah.
Yeah.
Because that's part of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a big part of why our lobster roll is so good. I mean, it's overnight shipped every day, especially in the summer. It's a couple times a day. I've got some coming in UPS. Right after this, I'm going to run down to Southwest, pick up our lobster meat. It's up here and, you know, people are eating it today and tonight.
Yeah. So do you buy from a particular person?
So it's a couple guys my husband used to fish with. They've kind of expanded their business. And we ship the rolls, we ship the meat, everything right there from Maine. They take it down to Boston, and then it gets on a Southwest flight from Boston to here.
Wow. Just like that.
Just like that. Yep.
Huh. Let's see. And then in addition to lobster rolls, I mean, that's certainly what you know for. You got other stuff, though, at the
we sure do. I mean, we just wanted to make sure if a group came in and there was somebody who didn't like lobster, that they could, you know, get something else. And whether it's the healthy person who wants just a clean salad, we've got that. We've got the barbecue chicken sandwich, a caprese sandwich for somebody who maybe wants vegetarian. So, yeah, we've got some Auntie Em's pie there, which people come in for, which they love. So, yeah, we try to have a little bit of everything for everyone, for sure.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Look forward to hearing the results.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's Lauren Smob again with Freshie's Lobster Company, off to defend their world's best lobster roll this weekend in Maine. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW.